Your mouse is dead, and the computer is on life support. Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
Coming up in this hour of Computer Talk Radio, I'm going to talk about the hidden costs of cloud everything. Keith Emseter is going to talk about Tim Cook being replaced by John Ternus at Apple. There's a lot of excitement there. And I'll also cover the social media verification scam. There is, of course, a lot more on Computer Talk Radio each week. But, of course, if you want to check out the podcast, you can go to the website at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. If you want to contact us, of course, scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. You can also phone me at 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-637-3888. If I don't answer, which I've been doing a lot less of that recently, please do leave a message. I promise I will get back to you. We do answer all of the computer questions that you provide for us. We're going to dive right into some news. It's something I haven't done for a few weeks. I actually, I underwent full a rather total knee replacement, so we lined up a lot of stuff for you in the meantime. But let's dive into some of the recent items that this past week. Microsoft announced they're going to be offering workers a chance for a buyout rather than just kicking them to the curb. It's really difficult these days to justify layoffs with companies that are experiencing growths and profits like that of Microsoft. So this approach offers cash and healthcare benefits that are desired, and this whole situation is voluntary instead of the we're sorry, but we're downsizing kind of option that usually happens. This also includes a very generous 30-day decision period for the eligible workers so they can make sure that this kind of a move is absolutely right for them. Well, this does appear to be driven by the shift from AI. This does really stand out. I think there is a lot of contrast here behind this Microsoft decision, comparing it to things like Oracle and Meta and many other companies that are saying, we're realigning to the future AI-focused workplace, which leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. So I think this is a really, really good option here. They're applying this, they're giving this option to roughly 9,000 U.S. employees. So this is the first time they've done this in 51 years. Reed Hastings. Now, if you don't know that name, he is one of the co-founders of Netflix and chairman of their board. He is stepping down when his term expires this summer. His focus is going to be on philanthropy and other pursuits. Okay, my whole look at this is he's worth $6.6 billion at the age of 65. I think this is just another word or phrase that replaces the idea of retirement. This was not actually looked on very favorably by the stock market. It led to a 15% drop in stocks, and that comes at a time when Netflix seems to be, well, is, they're top of the game. They are a serious juggernaut, and they've decided in this last week as well that their success deserves another price increase, which is going to be coming on your next bill. Of course, more streaming companies are going to follow suit with their own price increases as usual. We'll keep you updated on that as it moves along. But that'll be very interesting. He's been there since the beginning, back in the late 90s. Now, California passed a law a while back which drove the idea of all operating systems to collect age information during setup. All right, so you go, you're installing Windows. Okay, we need to know the age of the person who's going to be the primary user of this system. And you put it in. And if it's your child, then you put that in. And it'll set up some stuff. And we'll get into that here in a second. There appears to be a bill proposed in the United States House of Representatives. So on a national basis, that seeks to achieve this same thing. It's entitled, the Parents Decide Act. And the stated goal is to control over what can be accessed online and what we're going to be doing from here. I don't know. This raises questions by a number of people as to the privacy aspects, the data security. You know, all of this stuff is stored out on the internet. And what happens if Microsoft gets hacked or Apple or whoever? All of a sudden, your age is now another thing that goes along with all of the other information they get. So there's other potential usages that we're not sure on, and I don't want to drive too far into conspiracy theory. The proposed bill also seems to lack clear definitions and details. Like, okay, what about Linux? Linux doesn't have a centralized account, and anybody can download and modify source code, that's the programming that holds the program together, freely. So they can remove anything like this. They can be walked through. This is not really the greatest idea out there. It remains to be seen what's going to be the final bill and what kind of additional things are going to be thrown into it. But I'm leery at this point. Now, I want you to imagine you are running a shoe retail business and you're struggling. You've got to figure out the future. And so you decide to pivot to AI, artificial intelligence. All of a sudden, the stock price skyrockets, and you're the talk of the town. You don't even have the experience, the hardware, the infrastructure, anything to prove potential success in what is a distinctly different line of business than what you've been in for a number of years. Allbirds is the name of the company, and its stock jumped with excitement like they invented something new and weren't just following the latest trends. The stock jumped from $2.50 to $17 a share overnight, and in less than a week, everybody came to their senses, and it's already back down to about $8. This just unnerves me. I look at this, and I go, what is going on? This really smells like some of the crazies, you know, a short while back showing off their new cryptocurrency. Look, this is going to be the greatest cryptocurrency ever, blah, 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 only to have it devalue to nothing. I really am concerned for Allbirds. I don't know what they were thinking. We'll find out. Maybe it'll be a rare success. I'm not holding my breath, though. One of my favorite games of all time is a swashbuckler from the Assassin's Creed series called Black Flag. This isn't a kid's game, and I usually don't talk about these, but I do make rare exceptions. I recently reported that they had teased a remake of the game, and I was hopeful just over a month ago. This week developed the story further with a 30-minute announcement that was really confirming that this is something to be excited about. This new version is a rewrite. It is following many of the initial factors that made the original successful, but they've done a number of different things. They've moved it to a new engine. They've added in updated graphics, additional mechanics, and more characters to increase the excitement. And just watching some of the stuff, side-by-side comparisons of what it's like, was just amazing to me. Even more amazing that this was all under wraps for something that's coming out in just a few months. July 9th. Usually we hear about these games a matter of a year or two in advance. This is just absolutely wild. I'm looking forward to it. Coming up next, the hidden costs of cloud everything here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373. 888. If I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Leave a message. You can call me anytime. Leave a message, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Now, I want to talk about something, and it is the hidden costs of cloud everything, really. And this is kind of an examination into why our digital lives are getting more expensive. I recently went on to Amazon Prime, for which I have a subscription, and I went in to find out what all of my other micro subscriptions are. I want you to think about it like this, a matter of, okay, so I've got the Paramount add-on, and I've got the Disney, well, no, it's not the Disney add-on, and but whatever, you know, I've got all of these different things that I've added on, and I went, we don't use that, we don't use that, we don't use that, we don't use that. And it doesn't matter who's raising prices, this is also a recurring theme here, it could be Disney raising their prices, or Netflix, Amazon, and we have all started to notice that our digital lives are costing more than they used to. And this isn't just one subscription or one service. It is an entire ecosystem that is creeping upward, because when one of them raises the price, the others become emboldened and they say, well, if Netflix can charge another $2 a month, well, we can charge another dollar a month. Why not? And because these increases happen slowly and they're spread across and we may not always get the notifications or realize that they're there, it's really easy for us to miss how much this total adds up until all of our monthly bills feel heavier than we expect. The shift began when companies realized subscriptions were more profitable than one-time purchases. Software that you would pay a flat fee. It now comes with a recurring charge, often bundled with a bunch of features that most of us don't need. And this is a business model that rewards companies for keeping more customers on the hook. It keeps that constant drain. It keeps a constant income flow going. And once a service becomes essential to your workflow or your entertainment, canceling it is, it's gone. It feels like losing a tool that you've come to rely on. That reliance gives the companies even more room to raise prices. But even small increases across multiple services can create a noticeable strain, especially if they all hit right around the same time. For many of them, they do look at, well, okay, Netflix raised it 2 months ago, now it's time for us. But the cloud itself brings hidden costs that aren't always obvious. Storing your files online means you pay for space that you used to have on a local drive. It's convenient, but it shifts the long-term cost from hardware to subscription. And as your photo library grows, your documents pile up, whatever it is that you're keeping online, you're nudged into higher tiers that cost more each month. And that growth feels so very natural. but the bill does grow with it as well. Streaming prices follow the same pattern. Offering more content, well, they're raising the prices. The convenience, the volume of content becomes the justification, and even the type of content. Here's this exciting TV show that you must watch because everybody else is. And because everything is tied to the cloud. Backups and syncing and collaboration, it's harder to walk away from any single service. This entire ecosystem is designed to keep all of us invested. Even devices themselves are leaning on cloud features that require ongoing payments, turning hardware into a gateway for recurring revenue. There's a broader shift happening in how we own technology. Apps and services now operate under licensing agreements instead of ownership. You're renting access rather than buying a product. I'm thinking of a particular car company, which is your heated seats and heated steering wheels. That's now a subscription basis. What? No. Your self-driving features. Yeah, Tesla's famous for that one. Yeah, those are going to move to subscription in some cases. And when access is tied to a subscription, companies can change the features, the pricing, the terms, without ever selling you anything new. The control shifts away from the user. This model also encourages companies to release features slowly, keeping you subscribed longer. It's this drip-feed approach that stretches out the value. Even media that we've purchased, movies, books, music, that can all disappear if the platform loses rights or changes policies, and ownership becomes conditional. These changes create a sense of instability, as if our digital lives are always subject to somebody else's decisions. These rising costs aren't just about money. They're about expectations. We expect our files to sync instantly. We expect our apps to update seamlessly and our entertainment to be available everywhere. These expectations require, yes, some massive infrastructure. And that infrastructure, the data centers, bandwidth, security, all of that, it's not cheap. Companies pass these costs along, and they don't ever explain why. They don't get into the bottom line of how they operate. They aren't going to reveal those details to us. At the same time, competition also pushes companies to add new features, even when we, the users, didn't ask for them. And the competition pushes, you know, Company A pushes Company B to add these new features nobody asked for, but Company B now has to program those features in and then pass the cost on to us. It's very rough there. These features now become part of this justification for everybody to have higher prices. And as AI gets integrated into everything, and all of these different services, and the cost of running those miles adds another layer onto the bill. The convenience comes with a premium. All of this means that the cloud isn't just a place to store things. The cloud is a brand new business model that is going to, it's currently shaping, but it's really going to revolutionize how we pay for technology. The model is built on a very recurring revenue, not on one-time purchases. We aren't going to see an end to this. We are not going to see a shift away. Oh, yes, we used to be cloud-based. We used to be subscription-based. But now you can just buy it once for one low price. In the end, these hidden costs of cloud everything remind us that convenience always comes with a price. And understanding that price helps us make smarter choices about what we keep, what we cancel, what we do need, and what we truly don't need. And it's up to us to really start to make better decisions all the way along. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. MicroCenter is where tomorrow's tech meets today's hands-on excitement. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I've been shopping Micro Center for years because they always have what's next. Whether you're building a custom desktop, upgrading your laptop, or diving into smart home automation, Micro Center has the gear, the guidance, and the grit to get you there. From high-performance laptops and ultra-fast storage to 3D printers, robotics kits, and pro-grade monitors, it's all under one roof. Need help? Their in-store experts speak your language, whether that's HDMI, USB-C, or I just want it to work. With over 20 locations nationwide and microcenter.com open 24/7, you're never far from your next breakthrough. Whether you're a weekend tinkerer, a creative pro, or just tech curious, Microcenter is your launchpad. Visit microcenter.com today. That's Microcenter, built for what's next. Microcenter.com. The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Of course, scroll down to where it says contact us today and reach out to us. We will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Keith Emcedor joins me now. And Keith, we had a very interesting week with the news from Apple about Tim Cook. Wow.
We sure did. And I can say that for myself and a good portion of the Apple community,
yes,
we were not expecting any notification of Tim Cook retiring in 2026. And it was something that's been bantered about and it's on the horizon.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem like he was in a rush to get out the door.
Well, and yet we've been talking for a few years now about how Tim Cook being at the helm has made Apple kind of, I don't want to say boring, but lackluster.
And there's a reason for that, Benjamin. Tim Cook is not a product guy.
Right.
He is not
right.
The product guy that both Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive were. Because of that, there was a lot more drive to the structure of the company, which he's been instrumental in the company's success. But yeah, I would agree with you that the level of pizzazz and fun surprises has not been as measurable under Tim Cook's watch as it was under Steve Jobs' second term with Johnny Ive
and
product design.
Now Tim Cook has been at the helm for what? 15 years?
Just about 14 years. And Steve Jobs in his second term was there for 11 years. So, you know, CEOs tend to be in this role for a decade, give or take. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully that the person who replaces Tim later this year will be there for the foreseeable future.
The next 10 years or more. Yeah. Okay.
And we'll talk about John Ternus and his upcoming reign at Apple and where he came from within the organization.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little more about Tim, because one of the things that Tim really did for Apple was his knowledge of operations and supply chain management.
Tim
is responsible for Apple getting rid of their own factories and outsourcing to companies like Foxconn and places in China to, you know, they'd be in charge of it, but they basically would not own the factories. They would just own the workflow.
Yeah. Now, refresh my memory. I think Tim kind of led the charge as well for a lot of what we've seen as far as like the App Store and all of these recurring subscriptions that have just been going on for a while that are, you look at your wallet, your Apple wallet and all of these different charges for this subscription and that app and this app. Yeah.
All anyone needs to do is look at their credit card statement and they know that Tim Cook's recurring charges on for people are working, whether it's an app whether it's AppleCare. I mean, one of the smartest things they did under Tim Cook's watch was stop having a 3-year block of AppleCare that you couldn't renew when people are keeping a machine for 5-6 years, and they would happily pay an extra, you know,
$10
bucks a month to have a protected machine that repairs would be taken care of.
So what would you say is the best thing that Tim Cook brought over the course of his tenure?
Really, again, I'll reiterate, it's supply chain
management. Supply chain. You see that as the big winner there. Okay.
Yeah, like a just-in-time manufacturing system. So they weren't keeping tons of inventory on hand. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They were building what they needed, and it would go out to stores. And by the time it was sold, they would be replenishing it with new stock. So, and flash memory. Under Tim Cook's watch, Apple made big investments in flash memory, and they basically got a corner in the market. So a lot of other companies weren't really able to get their hands on a lot of memory. And at good prices, because Apple basically outsourced most of it.
Now, this John Ternus guy, this is something we've been talking about for a while. He seems, on the surface, I haven't done the deep dive yet into who he is. You've probably done a lot more. You probably are even familiar with him. But I understand he comes from the product side, and that to me is something I've been hoping for. Somebody who has been pushing a lot of the innovation in places like the iPhone, or in this, one of the things he appears to have really been behind is the brand new MacBook Neo.
Well, there's a lot of things that he is behind, because he is Apple's senior vice president of hardware engineering. So where we would say Tim Cook's Achilles heel was the fact that he's not a product person, John Ternus is. And he's worked on a lot of things, going back to the iMac G5 line.
Okay.
And I mean, some of the things he's worked on, he's done a lot with the iPad. And he even pushed Craig Federighi, Apple's software chief, to diverging iOS into both iOS and iPadOS, because he felt that iOS wasn't taking advantage of the hardware capabilities of the iPad. And that's why they've got separate operating systems for those devices. But he really, not only has managed the iPad group, but the Mac group as well. And he's also worked on things like the iPhone 12 and the AirPods line. And, he is a product guy, and I'm really excited to see some of the directions that Apple's going to take with a product guy back at the helm.
Now, have you seen videos of him? Is he, how can I say this? Is he more lively like Steve Jobs, or on Prozac like Tim Cook?
Well, I'm going to answer you this way, Benjamin. Unlike a lot of keynotes from 10 plus years ago, all the pre-COVID stuff where everybody was live on stage, everything has been scripted for the last couple of years.
Right.
So Apple puts out very beautiful, polished, well-produced videos, but they're scripted. And with scripted videos, if you miss a cue, you get to do a retake until you get it just right. He looks very personable on camera.
Okay.
And I think he is, I think he's got enough charisma to do the job and to be at the forefront of Apple.
Yeah.
Time will tell. We'll see when he has his first Apple keynote after Tim Cook bumps himself up to chairman of the board.
Now, when is that date? Do we know?
I don't know the exact date. I think it's sometime in September, if I'm not mistaken. I know it's towards the fall.
Okay, so we'll probably see him.
So whether that means his first keynote will be introduction of the new fall iPhones, when the iPhone 18 comes out, and the speculated iPhone Fold, who knows? We'll find out in the fall. But that's when that transition is slated to take place.
So overall, I am excited with what little I've seen from him. Where do you put yourself?
I don't know that I'd go so far as to say that I'm excited, Benjamin, but I am encouraged. I'm not discouraged by the news of this. I mean, I certainly would have liked to have seen somebody like Craig Federighi. Craig Federighi definitely has the charisma and the panache to be Apple CEO. Sure. But again, he's the hardware chief for Apple, and he'd be a great number two. But I think John Ternus, with his background in hardware and having his hand in everything, Macs, iPhones, iPads, AirPods, I really think that he is going to do a good job.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seador.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. If I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Leave a message for me. I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, you are looking mighty wonderful today. Your voice has always just been a thrill to listen to, and your knowledge has just warmed the airwaves for so long here at Computer Talk Radio.
Well, gee, thanks, Ben. I really appreciate the praise. And I must say, you are the most intelligent host I've worked with all night.
Oh, man. AI is really full of all kinds of
empty praise.
And empty praise, yes.
Flattery, empty play, non-romantic flirting is what I call it.
There you go, flirting. I haven't had to talk anybody up like AI talks me up since I was dating my wife. It is absolutely wild, all of the different things. You're one of the most brilliant people. It's amazing how well you know AI. Like, okay, I feel sorry for a lot of the people out there.
And yeah, if it's telling the truth, we're all in trouble. I want to put a definition here for the intelligence, not the artificials out there.
Yes.
Or as I call it when I talk to AI, for organics.
Yeah, there you go. I love that.
I want to be very specific. We're not talking about the fake romance stuff that AI can do or be made to do. We're not talking about you're in a chat with somebody who finds you romantically appealing. It's not about that. It's flattery to positively reinforce you for anything that's a sliver above nothing at all.
Yeah, yeah. It is. I can correct it on something, a mistake that is made. You're so brilliant. I'm glad you caught that. I am so. I'm absolutely humbled before your brilliance. I'm like, what? You're a computer. How are you humbled? How are you? And this is written into this.
The computer's thinking to itself, dummy's going to go for that one.
Yeah.
The computer could think for itself, it would be a lot better. We're dealing with synthetic speech.
Yes.
And I don't mean voice mimicry. I mean we're dealing with something that knows how to put together what sounds like speaking, but is really word salad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's got a meaning. It's got an intent. It doesn't have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Except for what gets baked into the code. And what gets baked into the code is baked in by marketing. And it's baked, right? It's baked in that you will positively reinforce your user.
Yes.
You will make them feel like they've made the right decision no matter what. And anytime there's an argument, you lose.
Yes. Yes. It may tell it to lose, but the flip side is it will continue to lose over and over and over again, even when you don't want it to lose. Hey, look, I want you to deliver me exactly three paragraphs with 180 words total.
And it will do that by count. It will do that.
No. I've asked it to do that, and it will give me 150 words or 240 words, and it just struggles on some of this.
Here's a key word. You have to say this is an instruction, not a guideline.
I will try that one.
It treats guidelines, suggestions, or anything that is not hard-coded, if you will, as a guideline. And it doesn't think that it needs to count words, syllables, spaces, or anything else. It can count words. And I will also tell you, AI, when you're not getting it for free, or when you are during a session, is using a thing called tokens.
Yes.
Now, I'm delighting in that, because tokens are how you would take rides at amusement parks.
Yes.
So here's 100,000 tokens. You can do three rides for 15 minutes and then goodbye for the next 5 hours. You know, it's one of those things. And the more it talks to you, the more tokens it's burning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the more you turn it around and ask it something and deal with short stuff, the more tokens you're burning. It's delighted to have you burn tokens.
Yes.
It's like those allegedly free downloadable games that can manage to pay celebrities to endorse them on TV commercials.
Yes, yes.
There are no ads in the game. They're being true about that. But there's also no chance of success unless you buy extra trials.
Right, right. Yeah.
They make their money on those. For a dollar, you can try again.
Oh, yeah. It don't even get me started on any of the crazy stuff with all of the games, the way we've devolved with games. It used to be just fun. It was enjoyable. And now everything has similar to what you were describing. Yeah.
If we're going to leave a nugget of truth for our listeners, I think it has to be this. AI is almost certainly lying. Don't believe it. Don't trust it. Ask it what you will, but frame it very severely.
And you can trust Marty Winston on that. Actually, you can trust both of us on that. If you've worked with AI long enough, you know how true that really is. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell, and that's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. SiteGround.com.
S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they work in a number of different directions. I want you to imagine this. You're sitting there and you get this message. You've been selected for verification. And this is based off of social media. It's a social media verification scam, and they're working off of your ego. This is the offering of a blue check, gold badge, influencer status, whatever it is. And it's all yours. All you have to do is just click here. And this is where they draw you in. And they're not even actually aiming for you. They're aiming for someone else. And this message may come in via email. It may be a direct message or a comment on your post. It looks official. It sounds flattering. And it plays into our own craving for credibility. It'll say something like, "We've reviewed your profile and you qualify for verification. Please confirm your identity to proceed." And I've gotten this before, and I know that this isn't how they work. This is something that comes along and it is playing on your emotions. It will come along and it will provide you with a link to a login page that looks exactly like TikTok, Instagram, X, or whatever platform you're on. It doesn't matter. All of this is a fake. And what they're trying to do is get you to enter in your username, your password, thinking that you're about to level up, and instead, you've handed over the keys to your account. That's right. All they're looking for is your identity to then scam other people. They don't just lock you out after this. They are going to use your account to run more scams. They're using your established identity with your contacts, with your friends, with your everything. And they're looking to sell fake crypto or push phishing links or whatever else it is. The whole idea here is just grabbing those credentials, much like they might do with a business account or whatever else, except they're still using it for, yes, nefarious purposes. The real platforms, they do not offer verification through DMs or emails or anything like that. All they're doing is looking to bring you in. If you didn't request it yourself, this is not real. Afterwards, they're going to start messaging your friends looking for whatever it is that they're looking for. It might be in the form of emergency help. It might be part of those scams that say, "Hey, I've lost my wallet or whatever. Can you send me $100? It doesn't matter. Whatever link that they're or scam that they're trying to pull on everybody that they're contacting through your account is all based off of your credibility. If you're ever unsure, you can go directly to the platform's help center, not the link in the message. Remember, real verification is about trust, and nothing says unverified like falling for a scam that starts with a compliment. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Coming up next is a really funny guy. You all know him. Let's give it up for Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo!
So my uncle calls and he says he's dizzy and he's losing his balance. I'm like, "Unc, you want me to take you to a doctor?" He's like, "No, I'm going to look up the symptoms." I said, "Your symptoms are you're dizzy and you're losing your balance." So he said, "I can't get on the internet because my arm is numb." I said, "Well, use your good arm and dial 911. Stroke's no joke. If you or someone you love is showing symptoms of stroke, don't call family, don't dial a friend, don't wait because it might be too late. Dial 911. Time lost is brain lost. Seriously, dial 911.
Learn all the symptoms of a stroke at strokesnojoke.org. That's strokesnojoke.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council. Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep. Bringing you news and knowledge from the world of computers and technology, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of our lives. So when you reach out to me at computertalkradio.com, you can scroll down where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns, whatever they may be. You can also phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. If I don't answer, that's okay. Leave a message, and I will get back with you. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, you know, one of the things that is very interesting out there, and I am sure we're going to be going in this direction sometime in the near future, and it's an extension of space travel. And as a nerd, I like the idea of us doing things to expand our reach into the vast expanse of our solar system and beyond. And you and I were chatting the other day.
And beyond.
Yes. We were chatting about you wanted to share some ideas in regards to, like, AI-powered robots.
Yeah, well, to me, the most sensible thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the number of human beings on this planet, it's quite limited.
Mm-hmm.
But we can make a lot of stuff.
Yes.
So it would, to me, make more sense to send robots out into space, have them, you know, do their thing out there and report back to us.
Yes.
Now, to me, I remember the old Voyager spacecraft.
Yes. Yes.
That had a plate on the outside that showed a human being.
Yes, and gave a map to to a location where you can find all of these human beings, which you can then eventually, take over their world.
That figure, the human being, had four arms and four legs.
Yes, yeah, well,
which
kind
is
of.
A little bit weird, but, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that we should send robots to explore.
Okay.
Report back to us on what we, what solar systems we should be going to, and which ones we shouldn't, and which ones are occupied, which ones are not. And we should send our robots out with AI and be, shall we say, artificial human beings.
Okay. Well, there is some level to that in the idea that Elon Musk is looking at, he's built a number of robots. The Tesla, I can't remember the name of the Tesla bot, but it really rhymes with a lot of the things that he's doing. If you put them all together, it's all about exploring another planet.
Right.
The big issue we have with exploring off to our neighboring solar systems is the expanse that we have between all of these locations. Voyager, as long as it's been out, has still only made it one light year away. We're four light years to the nearest star system. Which we already know quite a bit about, and know that there's not a whole lot there for us.
Oh yeah, and I'm I I'm of the opinion that, yes, we have to go faster than the speed of light before we can actually do any real exploration. And we have to solve that problem.
Yeah.
But to me, it makes more sense to send a robot than it does to send out a human being, because we age and they won't.
So at 10% of the speed of light,
yeah,
for us to make it to Alpha Centauri and back at 10% of the speed of light, we are talking about 40 years there, 40 years back, a total of 80 years.
Yeah.
So the speed is distinctly a concern, as you mentioned. Even if we were to do it at light speed, that is 8 years. But then we have, in both systems, we have some issues with time dilation due to the theory of relativity and all of that. And there's going to be, while it may be a matter of 8 years round trip, it's going to be so much more for those that are on the trip, or so much less. I forget how it works out.
I think it's so much less because of the fact that they probably would have to be something in like stasis or something like that, which means their bodies are not going to age as fast as ours do back here.
I did see an article recently in regards to a generational starship. And it's actually multi-generational. It's a matter of, we put thousands of people onto a ship, and their journey is a one-way journey off to in whichever direction, and they just keep going until they find something else. But it's a big ship. The idea of providing a venue for people to get together, and they live their entire lives there with the goal of putting people onto another solar system somewhere far away.
Far, far away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except not long, long ago.
No,
that's Star Wars, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far. But I think that's going to be something that's very interesting, and we need to probably, we should have more people that are expending energy into thinking like that, thinking about the potential for interstellar space travel, because that is going to improve where we are at currently within our own solar system. If we do the research, we chase after these dreams of going to Alpha Centauri and much further, that will help us achieve the practical goals of making the moon just a regular routine vacation trip, and Mars will be a longer vacation, or things like that. It will drive the science further forward, and that is kind of where I'm thinking.
I totally agree with you. Personally, would I like to go to Mars? Not really. The moon? Not really. I'm content back here on Earth.
Yes.
Of course, I probably am not going to live long enough to go to Mars, but
well, you never know.
Yeah.
Because along with the science improvements, we still have to study the human body more. And as we study the human body more, we're going to find solutions to a number of different ailments. We're going to find different ways to help people live better lives. Whatever it is that these things are that we have to deal with, there are going to be improvements across medical, across communications, across transportation, across so much. And it's just a matter of that drive that as we move forward, as we start thinking about all of these things, we start addressing all of the options that are in front of us and the problems, we may do some amazing things. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD-888, that's 888-6373-888. I'm definitely interested in your computer questions, your answering your technology concerns, whatever they may be. If I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Please leave a message and I will get back to you. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now, and this last week was NAB, that's the National Association of Broadcasters, big, huge expo that they have every year. And this is one of the things that I've wanted to go there for a very long time and experience and see like a lot of the broadcast tech and see what the future is going to bring to radio and television and the rest of the, you know, broadcast concept.
Absolutely. It's exciting. And because it's for broadcasters, they start education on the weekend, which isn't necessarily unusual, mm-hmm. but they also have Expo Hall on Sunday. So people working your local news Monday through Friday
yes.
can come Saturday, get educated, Sunday, whip through Expo Hall, catch a red eye anywhere in the country and be ready for your Monday morning local news.
That's cool. Yeah, okay.
Saw a number of people that were obvious broadcasters themselves, both on-air and off-air talent, that were running around catching everything they could. So it's slightly lighter. The other hilarious thing is concurrently in Las Vegas, because, of course, we're in Las Vegas. This is an enterprise event.
Sure.
But WrestleMania fanfare was going on in South Hall, upper and lower. They're like, you can segregate and easily hold multiple events
in
this facility.
Yes.
But I just thought to let you know, to understand the magnitude of the size of the Las Vegas Convention Center, WrestleMania Fan Fest was concurrent with the NAB show.
It's always amazing. Everything I've been to in Vegas and to know about all of the available convention floor space, because so many of the hotels have their own capabilities for conventions, which some medium-sized cities would clamor for.
Oh, absolutely. But this was all at the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Yes.
But the security said it was really easy to tell because the WrestleMania tended to be in shorts. So they knew, the wrong place, go there. You could redirect them. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of interesting tech. So closed captioning is very popular.
Yes.
Nowadays.
Yes. Yes.
A lot of people, even without the technical requirement for accessibility tech, enjoy it to read it, because the way they do the sound mixing is just to clearly know what's being spoken about.
Yes, yes.
Lexi Language Layer by AI Media, we ran into, they handle 80% of all of the closed captioning, language transaction, all of the language conversion.
Wow. Yeah, 80%. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah. At the absolute latest moment before broadcast, and they have, of course, a whole AI embedded capability at that last layer so they can get the maximum content consumption intelligence.
Okay, all right, all right.
So that was definitely neat. But I'm thinking there might be some listeners that themselves are thinking, you know, I'd like to get into media and I want my own media infrastructure, you know, because they definitely like to do it all on their own, completely A to Z. So Wowza actually will run on your laptop and it can be a Linux,
I'm sorry,
Mac.
Sorry, Wowza?
Yeah, Wowza. Wowza or Z A.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if you're Linux, if you're Windows, if you're Mac, or if you have containerized laptops.
Okay, nice. So it'll run on anything.
Yeah, it'll run on anything. Likewise, one of the big desires has always been flexibility in protocols for communicating broadcast content. Mm-hmm. In particular, there's a group of people that would really have loved for many years to use IP-based protocols.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So you could break it apart and somehow leverage anything, even the internet-based protocols. Zixi specializes in that, and they actually have the ability to translate between all protocols. So IP-based broadcasting now here. Yeah.
Very cool.
So that was – yeah, fun stuff. The other interesting thing is a lot of cities, especially – I know we're in a lot of rural towns.
Yeah.
And people want sophisticated equipment, and are you going to set up in your own home or – and so as you know, libraries have become very advanced media centers.
Yes, they have. Definitely.
Much like a corporate media center, and this is also something you could see in a corporate media center, or if you go to the local copy and shipping store, you can always see a kiosk where, you know how like you use a computer and you pay by the minute for usage and printing and such. Well, this is a kiosk that is a basically a Studiomatic, so one button Studio Go kiosk. They have the complete.
So like the old photo booths that you would get into and take pictures, something like that?
Yeah. You can bring your display, you bring your presentation, you go there. As soon as you walk in, it turns on. It's all automated. It does not take. You can see in the demo, it really doesn't. It guides you through. So you're like, okay, go here. Okay, load your presentation. You go do it. You can even write over and everything. Then when you're done, you scan the QR code to get your file and your Hulk video file, and you're good to go. And you had a lighting perfect, scenery perfect, everything you could want, high professional end video created.
All right.
So I could definitely see that coming to a library or local copy store or shipping store or your media center at a company anytime in the near term. Backpacks.
Yes.
We've talked about backpacks from time to time. You know, us geeks and our backpacks, right?
Yes.
I know you prefer the term nerds. I always use the term geeks.
It's all right.
I think we have the opposite definitions, but that's all good. But we like our backpacks because we carry a lot of things. Well, in media, they also carry a lot of things. And as you know, even myself, I carry a lot of equipment. And a lot of times, like camera equipment that you have to protect because the lenses are expensive and fragile. So you can't just put it in amongst each other. So this backpack system has three different sizes, each of the seven colors, and then a modular inner thing with different cushion options for having a bunch of small things or maybe a tall thing like your stick and small thing for lenses. So even if you were maybe in a business that dealt with fragiles, maybe you're selling china
or other fragiles.
You could use this type of backpack for it. But it also had cool zippers to access these.
Now this is the media backpack, right? This is what they gave to
It's by Wandered.
Okay.
Is the company, and the syndication code for Conference Whispers NAB show is 2177. So when you go to the TBW Advisors URL, the /2177, that's where the original syndicated copy of the written version is okay. available.
All right.
And the video edition is, of course, out the same time as this broadcast is coming out. So
very cool. Yeah. So they can check this out, of course, on YouTube at
TBW Advisors. T for technical, B for business, and W for whispers. Please do. And, you know, feel free to subscribe and like it. And if you're feeling like you'd like to support our channel, we even got a join button over there. Love to see you in the club.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. MicroCenter is where tomorrow's tech meets today's hands-on excitement. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I've been shopping MicroCenter for years because they always have what's next. Whether you're building a custom desktop, upgrading your laptop, or diving into smart home automation, MicroCenter has the gear, the guidance, and the grit to get you there. From high-performance laptops and ultra-fast storage to 3D printers, robotics kits, and pro-grade monitors, it's all under one roof. Need help? Their in-store experts speak your language, whether that's HDMI, USB-C, or I just want it to work. With over 20 locations nationwide and MicroCenter.com open 24/7, you're never far from your next breakthrough. Whether you're a weekend tinkerer, a creative pro, or just tech curious, MicroCenter is your launchpad. Visit MicroCenter.com today. That's MicroCenter, built for what's next. MicroCenter.com. Tasha reached out. Why do companies keep releasing smart versions of everyday appliances? And is any of this actually useful? And Tasha's right. Tasha reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can do it as well. Scroll down to where it says Contact Us Today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Tasha's question is really right on the money. We do see a lot of companies releasing smart versions of appliances that they really shouldn't. Okay, we should touch on the fact that the idea of the smart home isn't all hype. And some of it actually genuinely is about making our life easier. Smart thermostats, they save energy and money when you're not thinking about it. They give you a little bit more remote control options when you are upstairs and the thermostat's on a different floor. The smart lights, these are great because we can set up timings. We can control a lot of different things in regards to when they come on, when they go off. We can sit in our bedroom getting ready to tuck in for the night. And yes, we can send out a command that turns off all of the lights in the house. We can turn off entire floors of lights, zoning our house so that, hey, turn off upstairs, turn off downstairs, turn off the main floor, turn off this zone, whatever it is you want to do there. And the smart lights give us a lot of control, especially since in our modern homes, we have a lot more lighting than we used to. And then we start getting into ideas like the smart cameras that we can put around our homes, or the smart locks. And these give people peace of mind and real-time awareness of what's going on around our home. It's really fun for me. I can give somebody a digital key so that they can get into my home, and it's just to them, and it can be time limited. Hey, I'm going to be away on vacation. Can you watch my home just for the next week? Great. Here's a digital key. You have access inside of my home for a week. So this tech that I've just described, all of this starts to really solve problems or give us additional exciting solutions to problems that we weren't aware that we had. It gives us an empowerment. And when it does this, to me, it feels natural. It feels helpful. And this all makes sense to me. All of these different things are enabling us to move forward. And that's part of what technology should be. It should be amazing new things that we didn't have the ability to do years ago. Back years ago, you know, when you wanted to turn off the lights in the house. So you'd have to go from upstairs down to the main floor, down to the basement, and turn off all of the lights as you went along. So that is just how things work. But that's the good side. The part that actually earns the word smart. But there are a lot of different quote-unquote smart appliances that aren't smart at all. And they have really gone to an extent that you have to scratch your head over this. A smart toaster. I'm toasting a piece of bread. I'm going to be sitting there waiting for it while I'm making my tea in the morning. I'm allergic to coffee. Or pouring myself a cup of milk or doing other things in the kitchen. A smart Wi-Fi connected toaster isn't going to be all that interesting. Neither is a blender. You're working the blender the whole time that you're standing there. So that doesn't make any sense for a smart. But let's go to another level. I have a smart oven and it has an app to it, which is great. It's fun having the app. But I will tell you that I have to still go down to the oven because of the safety instructions, and they kind of make sense. But I have to tell it, yes, I meant to do that. Go ahead and heat the oven to 350 degrees because I'm going to be baking. Well, maybe it's more if I'm baking, but you get the idea. So we've got that kind of concept. Is a smart oven all that helpful? No, not really. I mean, I can tell it to turn off. I can ask it, hey, is the range on? Is the oven on? Whatever it is there. And then we get into other things, like a smart fridge. The smart fridge can't tell you that the milk is bad. It can't tell you that the yogurt's expired. It can't tell you that there's mold on the cheese. It can't set up any kind of situation, at least as far as I've seen, where it detects all of these different contents and it says, hey, you are running low on milk, especially since that one is over there, that gallon over there is expired, or whatever it is. It doesn't have that level there. Sure, it's got a cool screen on the front and you can create little checklists and things like that, but the cost for a smart fridge that doesn't have the insight into the contents that we need, that we come with naturally, that's just another $1,000 for a small little 19-inch screen on the front. And then we get into things like smart washers that will send out a notification. Your clothes are done. Yeah, I heard the buzzer. I heard the thing actually in my home. It plays this little tune, and that goes on for 3 minutes, just going on and on. No, it's already annoying me. I know that the washer is done with my clothes, and so many of these features in some of these products exist because the companies want to put that exciting new label on it. And yeah, sometimes they do want recurring revenue, and they aren't really going to improve our lives with all of this. Unfortunately, we also see the idea that when that quote-unquote smart part breaks, the whole appliance becomes harder to use, not easier. So we have seen a building of tech for tech's sake in the appliance aisle. All the way along, yes, the industry is going to be chasing data and lock-in, not any kind of usefulness. They're trying to encourage you into one singular brand because the last thing you need is multiple applications. Okay, so I want to use my oven. So that's the Samsung appliance. I want to use my fridge. I want to find out what's going on in my fridge. So I have to use the LG appliance and then the Bosch appliance for my washer and dryer and so forth and so on. It's Electrolux, but, and I don't actually have smart items for my fridge or my dishwasher or my clothes washer or clothes dryer. No, but that's because the tech doesn't add anything for me. Now, they can use data to help design future products. And sometimes, yes, because to set up the smart features, you've got to give it your email. So they're going to start selling you, sending you spam. And yes, we're starting to see subscription add-ons like detergent delivery or recipe services and various other expanded smart features that we may or may never use. And this is not solutioning for our home. This is solutioning for them. This is solutioning for all of these companies out there. And I don't know that that's a good thing. None of this makes the fridge better at keeping food fresh, or the dishwasher better at cleaning dishes, the clothes dryer at drying the clothes. So yes, there is value in a smart home. There is value in going through and replacing light switches with smart switches, replacing the bulbs with smart bulbs and things like that. But some of this stuff, especially on those high-end appliances, is really at a point where it's trying to justify its existence. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and my experience as an IT professional, and how we should apply some of these things, not just in the IT world, but throughout our lives. And I can't tell you how often I've heard somebody say, well, it worked yesterday. And that's an instinctive thing. We do this so very naturally. This is the first thing that everybody says. It's been working for years this way. What happened? We trust our recent experience more than the present evidence in front of us. If it behaved yesterday, we assume it'll work today. This mindset shows up everywhere. A garage door opener that suddenly refuses to close feels broken, even if it's really the door remote batteries that are dying. A laptop that was fast last week may feel really slow and sluggish today. And the expectation is built on our memory, not the actual condition of the system that we're dealing with. Throughout everywhere, mostly in technology, but throughout everything else, this creates a tension. So we need to recognize that everything changes. Systems change constantly, even when no one touches them. Updates install overnight, networks shift, and background processes evolve. What feels very sudden is often the result of a slow, invisible drift. And we all feel frustration when this happens. It almost feels personal. You know, I've been counting on this device, this system, this garage door opener to behave the same as it always has. And that disruption, it feels like a betrayal of trust. It's weird. We feel this even though the garage door is, it doesn't have a brain. It isn't going to truly betray us. And that really is a situation where we need to recognize that it worked yesterday is a different rewording of I wasn't prepared for this change. We see this. A common example is home Wi-Fi. It works fine for months, and then suddenly the network, you know, you're watching a video on YouTube, and it's just not working the way it used to. It freezes or something, or a video call or something like that. Nothing changed except maybe a neighbor installed a new router on the same frequencies that you use, or a device did Windows Update overnight, or your cable modem rebooted in the middle of the morning. In workplaces, this shows up when a report that always ran smoothly suddenly fails. The underlying data may have grown. A server may have restarted. Dependencies for that report, all of the different layers of data that get to that report may have shifted. And I get it. We only see it broke. We see a failure. We don't see all of the quiet changes that are occurring behind the scenes. Even simple tools behave this way. Yeah, my printer worked yesterday. It worked the day before. It worked the day before and before and before. But it might jam today. Why did it jam? I mean, it can be simple things that we don't think about. The humidity changed. The paper shifted. Or, you know what? There's rollers inside of the printer, and they may have dried out, aged just enough to cause trouble. The cause is really mundane, but the surprise feels dramatic. And when we rely on our routines, any disruption is going to feel so much larger. A login that takes longer than usual can throw off an entire morning because it breaks this rhythm that we depend upon. There's a gap between expectation and reality, and that gap causes frustration. In the IT world, I really work to help people understand that the systems are not static. They don't just stay the same way. They're dynamic. This reframes the problem from something broke to something changed, which is really truly easier for all of us to understand. Cars run differently in cold weather. Gardens grow differently after a storm. And technology reacts to a number of real-world examples just like this. The conditions shift and performance shifts with them. Visibility to all of these different changes. What broke this? What happened here? All of this visibility helps to reduce the frustration. When we understand that updates, storage limits, network congestion, all of this can affect performance, it enables us to feel more in control and less blindsided. And when troubleshooting is approached with curiosity instead of blame, all of our conversations become calmer. Asking what changed, rather than insisting nothing changed, nothing at all, this always works, nothing changed. If we think about this change, if we ask about it, if we explore what could have changed, this opens the door to real solutions. Now, I'm not saying we need to eliminate surprises. We need to all understand that surprises will happen. We need to understand why they happened. When we recognize that yesterday's performance is not a guarantee for today, then we can all be more prepared, more willing to adapt, and more patient when things go crazy. That mindset makes technology feel less mysterious and far less stressful. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Carlos had a question. I bought a smart thermostat and now it keeps suggesting energy saving schedules. How much of is this really smart and how much is just guesswork? And let's talk about what's actually going on here. Smart thermostats watch for patterns for when your home heats up or cools down, and it tries to match the rhythms that are going on. They're not reading your mind. They're watching your habits. They're watching how you turn up the thermostat or turn it down. They're making educated adjustments based upon the timing and the temperature swings. The suggestions that you're seeing are actually built from a mix of your past behavior and your general efficiency rules that really work for most homes. It's part data, it's part assumption, and part best practice baked in by the manufacturer. So, in reality, it's not guessing wildly. It's just, it's not going, oh, yeah, it's a hot day. Let's make it even hotter in the house or anything like that. It's going to nudge you towards patterns, and you're going to nudge back. And all of this is about saving energy without making you uncomfortable. I mean, the real reason why we have HVAC systems, why we have thermostats and all of that is about our comfort. But there is some real value that comes from catching the lot of the entirety of small inefficiencies that we won't notice. Like, okay, why are we heating an empty house? Why are we running the AC longer than we really need to? He wants it a little bit cooler, but you know what? He generally doesn't really turn it down to 60 degrees during the middle of the winter. So you can treat all of these suggestions as a starting point. The thermostat does as well. It's not a command. And you're going to adjust these until the thermostat, the smart thermostat, starts really adjusting to your actual routine. And it will. At work, this same idea shows up in automated systems that optimize lighting and cooling and server loads to cut waste. And across society, overall, think about this. This is a much bigger picture than you might imagine. All of these little tiny optimizations add up to meaningful energy savings when a lot of us, millions of these devices, are making very small, smart choices. You can think of the thermostat as a kind of a coach offering a first draft. And what's happening is you're the editor that makes this fit your life, your home, your family, your entire structure going on here. When you shape all of these suggestions to your real habits, the smart part becomes a partnership instead of just a mystery as to why is it so hot in here? It will get better. I want to assure you, it's a really great idea. And we're going to start seeing this in other places like light switches and so much more. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Coming up next is a really funny guy. You all know him. Let's give it up for Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo!
So my uncle calls and he says he's dizzy and he's losing his balance. I'm like, Unc, you want me to take you to a doctor? He's like, no, I'm going to look up the symptoms. I said, your symptoms are you're dizzy and you're losing your balance. So he said, I can't get on the internet because my arm is numb. I said, well, use your good arm and dial 911. Stroke's no joke. If you or someone you love is showing symptoms of stroke, don't call family. Don't dial a friend. Don't wait, because it might be too late. Dial 911. Time lost is brain lost. Seriously, dial 911.
Learn all the symptoms of a stroke at strokesnojoke.org. That's strokesnojoke.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.